Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Howdy, folks. This is good old JR Jim Ross. I want to thank you for downloading the Ross Report. And I certainly want to thank all the sponsors. We've got some great sponsors who make this possible every single week.
He's considered the greatest broadcaster in wrestling history.
Yes, sir!
And now, WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross, the legendary voice you heard calling every major wrestling match in human history, brings his famous friends to the podcast world.
Nice!
Welcome to the Ross Report.
Hello again, everybody, and yes, Slobberknocker Audio is on the air. I thank you very much for downloading our program, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it, and I encourage you, if you haven't subscribed, to go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe for free, and that way, every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, our new episode will be downloaded automatically into the device of your choosing. This week, big show, big time. Wade Keller, Pro Wrestling Torch, the guru of that publication, will be joining me to talk about the Clash of Champions and many other things, including the Ring of Honor pay-per-view and some news of note that to come momentarily with Wade. And then in this program, we'll talk to Conan, one of the most creative, brightest minds in all of pro wrestling, will join me. And he's got a lot to talk about. He's got two gigs that he's working on, maybe more than that. And we'll talk about his new gig that just had a TV taping, a pilot in Nashville, his new Lucha show. So a lot of great things going on there with Conan. He's a busy guy. He'll come up here in a little bit later. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, by God, you know it. You want it. You need it. It's What's On My Mind.
It's time.
What's on JR's mind?
The biggest thing on my mind is the fact that this Wednesday at noon, on Ticketfly.com, we have a brand new event we're going to roll out at the Royal Rumble weekend. It's called Slobberknocker Sessions. It is going to be an intimate, exclusive, VIP, uncensored Q&A, plus Slobberknocker the Book will be there very prominently, because if you're one of the 100 folks that buy a ticket, you're going to get a free Slobberknocker book signed by me, customized by me if you choose. And that's going to be pretty cool, I think. So, very intimate atmosphere. 100 tickets will be put on sale on Wednesday. Get them early. Ticketfly.com. $75 gets you a free book signed. Also gets you the free telephone photo on your phone. We do that. That's a $20 value, by the way. It's a good thing. I think we put together a real cool package. I think you'll like it. It's a smaller group, more one-on-one time, better Q&As, just a lot more fun, I think, because everybody gets more attention. So be one of the 100. Join me in Philly on Sunday, high noon. And by the way, we're going to be having this event, you probably want to know that, at the Diamond Club, a Citizens Bank ballpark, of course, home of the Philadelphia Phillies. The Diamond Club, the ballpark, is within an easy walk. Matter of fact, I think their parking lots adjoin each other to the Royal Rumble Arena site. Paid parking is available nearby at Lot K, I'm told. K as in Kenny. Kenny. So remember that. Really a new concept. 100 folks. Keep it kind of cool. I think it's going to be good. So join us if you can. Sunday, January 28th, Royal Rumble weekend in Philadelphia starts at noon. Tickets go on sale this Wednesday, December 20th at noon at ticketfly.com. Hope you get your tickets early. Don't miss us. So it'll be a lot of fun. You know, we had a great show in Boston last week. Golly, my producer, Raphael Morphy, did a great job of leading me around and getting me where I needed to be. Jeremy Borash, as usual, delivered big time. It was colder than hell, I can tell you that. We had a lot of folks turn out, which I sincerely appreciate. Great Q&A. We had the Slobberknocker books there, some sauce and so forth, and we sold a bunch of that. And I signed a lot of books, which I really love doing. So I appreciate Boston coming out and helping us out. Radio, TV, the whole nine yards. You guys are all in, and we appreciate that very, very much. So those things are coming up. I'm really excited about this Royal Rumble weekend. I think you're going to have a lot of fun. If you're going to come to the Royal Rumble, if you're in the Philadelphia area, remember the whole facility there, the compound, if you will, the football stadium, the baseball park, and the arena are all basically on the same grounds. So check that out. Join me Wednesday, high noon, at TicketFly.com. Now, man, we got a ton of stuff in the show today. It is packed. So I will tell you this. That's what's on my mind.
Respect is not given.
A hearty welcome to Steve Kerr.
What a thrill to have listened to you all these years.
It is earned.
He's Basketball Hall of Famer John Calipari.
You still have the great voice of all time.
Sound of Success, the Dick Enberg Podcast.
Tennis Hall of Famer Billie Jean King.
I just hope everyone listening understands what an icon you are.
Exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet.
He's my All-American friend Bill Walton.
Dick Enberg, I love you.
Get episodes every Thursday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
Well, we are in the midst of the holiday season, quite obviously. Hope you've got your shopping done, but if you haven't, I have a suggestion for you. Check out www.shop.com. Look at our barbecue sauces, our chipotle ketchup, the jalapeno honey mustard, great seasoning, all-purpose rub, beef jerky. It's all there, ready to be shipped to your home very quickly, very efficiently by www.shop.com. Hey, I've been trying to watch my diet, so I just kind of splurged the other day. I had four little pieces of chicken breast. They were sad little breasts. They weren't enhanced. But I had that and a little bit of my hot barbecue sauce in a little skillet. I warmed it all up. I cut me some onions up in it, and I made a little funky thing with some Paul Newman salsa, and I mixed it all together, and I had me a hell of a little snack. The salsa's no fat. The chicken breasts are healthy, grilled. And a little bit of my hot barbecue sauce was just perfect. So there's a lot of ways to use it. My wife, Janie, used to make us meatloaf with the chipotle ketchup. Ooh, my baby. That gives me an idea for something for Christmas. Meatloaf. How about that? So check it out, www.shop.com. I appreciate your support of our projects there. And remember, the JR's original is my mama's original recipe, or as close as we could get it based on her notes that we found in the family Bible. Hell of a story, I'll tell you someday. And also remember, if you're looking for attire, like tops, shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, T-shirts, and any of our designs, I like the Slobberknocker shirt, but there's a lot of cool ones that they have at ProWrestlingTees.com/Jim Ross. Great people in Chicago. They got a wonderful retail store, and they do great things for our business and helping guys. Hulk Hogan's got a store there. Steve Austin's got a store there. Kevin Nash has got a store there. A lot of the guys are doing business with ProWrestlingTees.com, as am I. So check them out, ProWrestlingTees.com/Jim Ross for shirts. And they come up in a size 5X. That's why I'm eating more chicken breast. I don't want to be a 5X. Just me, just saying. It's good folks, good people. They're wrestling fans serving other wrestling fans. And that's about as good as you can get.
The Ross Report.
Always good to catch up with Wade Keller. He's been around a long time. Not as long as me. He's not an old man. He's a young man, but he's quite the entrepreneur. Wade, thank you, and happy holidays.
Thank you, Jim. Happy holidays to you.
Tell my audience, for those that may not know, I can't imagine that, about the Pro Wrestling Torch and your many audio ventures and how fans can easily access all your content, because you got a full plate.
Boy, do I ever. Yes. Well, the main focus is I'm proud to be part of the Podcast One family since July, and we drop 4 new shows per week, every Tuesday in the early AM hours, just a few hours after Raw ends. We've got our post-Raw show, and we do the same thing on Tuesday nights, so that drops in the early AM hours on Wednesday, covering SmackDown. We have on-site correspondents and a co-host, and we answer emails. Then we have our Thursday flagship, covering a broad array of topics, and then we have our Interview Friday format. Lance Storm is the current interview. Part 1 ran last Friday. Part 2 coming up this Friday. So just search Wade Keller wherever you listen to podcasts, including and especially at podcastone.com or on the Podcast One app. Search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts also. We'd love to have you try out our show and add it to your list of podcasts that you listen to each week. And then our main website is pwtorch.com. That's got results, breaking news, editorials, flashbacks, all kinds of cool stuff every single day updated. It'll keep you up to date on what's going on. You can also read my reports, such as Clash of Champions Sunday night. I was live covering that as the show took place. You could hit refresh on your phone or laptop and see what I think of that. And same thing every Monday and Tuesday for Raw and SmackDown. So that's probably enough of a plug. I mean, there's other things, but MMATorch.com, if you're into UFC, check out our team at our sister site covering the world of UFC and Bellator and such.
You ever get tired of watching wrestling?
That's sort of a trick question because I always enjoy it when I'm watching it, but there's times that there's so much wrestling to watch that I get pulled to other things that I think I should do for balance in my life, if that makes sense. So kind of the cop-out answer is if there was like 20 more hours in the week,
sure,
I'd spend a number of them watching more wrestling. But in order to achieve balance, because the accessibility to so much great wrestling, current and now retro, that I'd love to relive is so great, I never run out of things I want to watch, but I run out of time.
Yeah, sure. I understand. I praise the DVR gods. I can program my own time. I can watch it when I want to watch it.
Yeah.
In any form, long form, fast forward to the commercials, whatever. So that's kind of my deal. You said you watched the Clash of the Champions in Boston this past Sunday night.
Yep.
I was in Boston a little bit earlier. Well, I left that morning, actually. What did you think of the show? I watched it as well at home in my Apple TV. I feel very refined now that I know how to hook my iPad through my Apple television and watch the WWE Network. But nonetheless, what did you think of the show?
I thought it was kind of middle of the road. I thought that there were some good aspects to it. I think in the end I felt like I hadn't watched something that felt particularly important in the ongoing saga of WWE storylines. I didn't think there was great depth there. I thought that AJ Styles had a good but not great AJ Styles match, and Jinder Mahal looked about as good as he has looked. But it didn't. I wouldn't at the end of it say, "Oh yeah, now now Jinder Mahal proved that you know he can headline pay-per-views." I think he's a notch short of that. And I thought the co-main event with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against Shinsuke and Randy didn't have kind of that big moment where you were like, all right, I'm glad that, you know, I feel like I invested my time to see a big payoff to this storyline that's been dominating SmackDown each week. It felt like a to be continued. And that's fine, but I think the show needed something else to bring it up another level. And in like the women's match, it was all about the Lumberjacks. The tag match with a talent like Shinsuke and a talent like Randy was all about Shane and Brian. So I thought there just wasn't that show-stealing match or big storyline development or major title change that put it over the top. So, yeah, but I didn't have any major complaints either. It was actually one of those shows where I don't think that there were fewer talking points, really good or really bad, coming out of it. It sort of just delivered an acceptable 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. I thought that the Lumberjacks, albeit a good idea on paper, the way it was executed somewhat took me away from the title and the championship opportunities that Natty had. I came out of there still thinking that I believe that Charlotte's the best female wrestler I've ever seen. I had some really great athletic women in the Attitude Era, but boy, she's 5'10" and she's strong. And I mentioned the other day, she reminds me of a female Hulk Hogan. Bigger, tan, great body. I know she's really been working on her selling because I thought she had a good night selling, but she had to because she was getting attacked, you know.
I thought with the Superstar Shakeup, however many months ago, earlier this year, that SmackDown was being set up to be the Charlotte and AJ Styles brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we got thrown a curveball. Charlotte ended up just in the mix with, you know, others, with Naomi on top and the Carmella Money in the Bank storyline and other things going on. And she just ended up kind of in the background and treated like just another part of the ensemble, which was not at all what I expected and not what I advocated for. I think for the reasons you said, she just has a star presence.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see her be less robotic in the ring entrance routine. I actually talked to Lance Storm about this because he had consulted with some NXT wrestlers at one point about this, and it was one of the critiques he had of them, is, you know, make sure that when you're doing your ring entrance routine, whether it's on the stage, on the ramp, or as you enter the ring, that it doesn't feel like an empty arena rehearsal, but that you're feeding off the fans' energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I experienced with Hulk Hogan in the AWA, even before Vince McMahon signed him. He fed off the fans' energy, and I was just a little kid then, preteen, just huge into wrestling. At that point, it just looked starstruck by this Hulkamania taking shape. And he fed off the audience in a way that just sucked me in as a fan. I was like, wow, this guy needs me in order to win. And I think there's a little bit, she's a product of a system that trains people where to look, where to step, almost like there's foot outlines. I think that was Lance Storm's example, foot outlines on the stage, where you step here, step there to this beat of the music. And I see some of that on her promos, too. And then she loosens up on Talking Smack on Sunday night, and you get to see, that's who I want to see. So I'd like to see them let her be her a little bit more.
I don't think it's them letting her be anything. I think it's her getting more comfortable in a live environment as the wrestler. I think it's absolutely, you saw how comfortable she was, as you mentioned, in the post-game show with Sam and Renee. But I think it's a matter of Wade really getting comfortable. I can't imagine anybody with any logic looking at the characters and how they're different on Talking Smack and how they might be, in your view, as you said, and I can understand that, a little bit stiffer on live TV. I think it's a matter of finding her comfort level and building on it. So I'd like to see her expand on what she did on Talking Smack and see where that takes her. I think she would get over even bigger, without a doubt. What you're pointing out is a good point. So, but I like her, and I thought the show was, I enjoyed watching it. Maybe I was ready to watch a completely no channel changing, just here I am, and see how the thing was going. I saw some things on I liked, and some talents that I thought have made me notice them, like Rusev, Usos. Rusev's really good. Rusev is a potential baby face in the making. People organically like him. When he smiles, he kind of lights up the room. In any event, you mentioned a moment ago that about Hulk and Minnesota, AWA, that was your territory, your home team, when you were a young lad growing up and watching wrestling, as many of us did at that age. Fellow Minnesotan Tom Zink passed away recently, age 59. I've never heard the cause of death. Do you know anything about that situation?
No, and I've been asking around. It's kind of mysterious. That the funeral is weeks away. He died days ago, and the notification just hit the local Minneapolis newspaper on Sunday. I had people messaging me, you know, asking me, "Is this the Tom Zink?" You know, and they're like, "Well, the name match, or there's not that many Tom Zinks. Obviously, it's not like John Anderson, and the age matched up. But you know, it was just he had kind of dropped out of the local wrestling scene, and so people continue to ask. You know, me and I've been asking around, you know, do we know more? And we don't. We just know that he died at the hospital. So I'm thinking we'll get some information on this, you know, relatively soon, unless he just completely isolated himself from anybody, which to my knowledge was the case in recent years.
Yeah.
On the local indie scene. The people that I know who were around him years ago had just kind of been asking each other, hey, whatever happened to Tom? You know, he was kind of a subject like that. I think I even saw online at one point somebody started a blog going, whatever happened to Tom Zank? You know, kind of like, you know, finding Richard Simmons. So it as of this moment, I'm saddened by it. I knew Tom. I'd seen him at a lot of indie wrestling shows. We had some common friends. But I had lost touch with him like most people here in Minnesota had in recent years.
Interesting cat. Seemed to carry a big chip on his shoulder. And I say that not because I doubt his motivation, but because it's a sad lot to wish on anybody that they're carrying around this never-shrinking chip on their shoulder. And he was unhappy about a lot of things, and I think he felt like he maybe underachieved. You know, another thing, Wade, the common sense part of this deal, two things. One's a personal thing for me because I have sleep apnea, and it's severe. He may have had sleep apnea that went undiagnosed forever.
Yeah.
And if so, it'll cause a heart attack. I stopped breathing 99 times in a 60-minute sleep test. Not good. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, if you're off the grid, he's not working, he may not have insurance. If he doesn't have insurance, he may have not been able to take care of himself, the old annual physicals, blood work, and all those things. So, and I've known guys that way. You know, they find out that, man, they're in bad shape, and how did this happen? Well, I haven't been to the doctor in like 4 years or 5 years, that type of deal. because they didn't have insurance. So a lot of things could be the thing here, but it's just odd that all this information is like sludge, not coming out very quickly. The funeral's set for January 13th, I think, and it's just strange how it all came about. I'm like you. I'm saddened by it. He's a good-looking guy, great athletic body, you know, good physique, had pretty good aptitude for the business. He got saddled with Brian Pillman, which is always going to be an adventure, and, you know, and they did fine. So I feel badly for him, and that's one another good reason to keep up with the Torch, folks, pwtorch.com, because as soon as I know Wade is going to have something on his side as soon as he finds out conclusively what's going on. So,
well, once the death certificate is signed, then it becomes, you know, releasable to the media, and that, unless there's extenuating circumstances, should be a matter of days.
Yeah.
You know, I think before the end of the year there'll be some detail on it, and you know, hopefully, yeah. I mean, I don't know what to hope. You know, it's 59 is too young.
Yeah. If you find out anything, we'll be looking forward to that information from you. Have you kept up with any of the Twitterverse jousting between Jim Cornette and others on his side of the fence, and the Young Bucks and others on their side of the fence? I don't know why somebody has been making sure I see it. And I don't know why, what I'm supposed to do. I mean, I want to talk about the Ring of Honor before we jump off here, but I don't know how I'm supposed to get involved. What is your observation of that, or have you noticed there's something going on?
I don't pay real close attention, and I feel like I hear, like you, I hear about it when others kind of bring it up to me, which isn't very often, to be honest. But my take from what I have seen, and I'm not speaking to any specifics in the last few days, is that I think they both see it as good for their brand to feud with each other. And I think they see that it's sort of like partisan politics. Rally the people who are on your side by being bombastic in response to people who have differing opinions or philosophies than you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably, from a wrestling stylistic standpoint, more on Jim Cornette's side than the Young Bucks. But I'm also... followed this business enough to have seen many different styles work and many different styles of wrestling appeal to different fans.
Right.
And some people get really, really attached to one style, and that's the only style that they'll ever accept. And I have my personal favorites, and I think sometimes the Young Bucks become a parody of wrestling, and it's not my favorite thing. And I'm more into a more realistic foundational approach. Keeping things in the ring, making the moves seem like they're part of how a real fight would go within sort of a structure. And I see the Bucks vary from that a little too much. I think they did Friday night, again, to my taste. But it's not all about me. You know, it's all...
Come on. You're being too hard on yourself.
I think that if people love what the Young Bucks do, people love Chikara Pro, if people love Lucha Libre, I mean, like, there's all these different styles, then more power to them for making it work for them and their audience. And that's where I differ with Jim Cornette, and that I don't think that there should be a dictatorship of sorts telling people what style they're allowed to like. So I agree with Cornette. I'm more in line with Cornette on what I like, but I'm much more flexible in let people enjoy a different style if they want.
I agree. Obviously, I'm an old-school guy. I'm a Mid-South disciple. And UWF and the physicality that Cowboy Bill Watts demanded from his athletes was, I haven't experienced anything like it since. And then the Dusty era was kind of wild and woolly. I like that. Flair and Steamboat's three matches, 89. I'll never forget those. They're wonderful. But I've mellowed in my older age, especially this year. Had a couple ups and downs I hope I'd never have to experience again. But I am a lot more open-minded and a lot more willing to let others express their opinion without me going crazy. Like you said, to me, it's like going out to a restaurant. If I like lucha wrestling, I'm going to the Mexican restaurant. If I want, you know, bread and butter, bacon and eggs, steak and potato type deal, then that's old school. That's where I'll go. If I want to clean my diet up and I want to eat healthy, then I'm going to eat something else. Point is, there's a lot of good food out there. There's a lot of good product out there. It's not all the products, not for everybody. Bottom line for me. The more people that are good people that are trying to make a living in our business, the better off the business is. And the happier I am, because others then are getting to live their dream, just like I did when I was a fat kid with an Oklahoma accent trying to get on television. So I don't have no issues with it. And I think as far as the Young Bucks are concerned, Wade, they're probably could teach some of the guys about being better entrepreneurs and marketers, because they seemingly have a feel for their audience, who their audience is, where they are, and what they will buy. And, man, that's a hell of a skill.
And I think the Young Bucks play to an audience that's looking for something different than the predominant WWE brand. And I admire and encourage any alternative, especially in 2017 going into 2018, with the behemoth that WWE is. They found a formula that works for a large international audience. And there's a lot that I like about what WWE does with their style.
Right.
And there's things I disagree with and would like to see change and think would be good for business to change. Even if the authority has kind of co-opted that term and taken ownership of it, what's best for business should kind of guide how you judge objectively, you know, the product and the style, that the approach that they take to the style they promote.
I know this, Wade, and that is, if my theory has always been, I would like to see fewer risk taken, where the risk reward factor is completely out of proportion. Oftentimes, those amazing risks that could really put you on the shelf for a long time isn't even the finish. And then I also believe that sometimes, in all matches, no matter what company, you can see and sense a over choreographing of sequences inside the ring, and that kind of bothers me. I've always liked the spontaneity, the outrageous ad libs, you know, audibles called, feeling it. That's what I think kind of got me hooked when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I just think that that should be addressed. But hey, look, these kids are making money, providing for their families. I wish they would. All of them are taking the massive bumps. Anytime you're taking bumps on the apron or on the floor, you're flirting with disaster. Quite frankly, just what you're doing. And speaking of taking bumps on the apron, what a segue that was. You see a lot of that in New Japan. You see a lot of that in New Japan. When and where, how will you watch the New Japan World? Because I know you're going to be consuming the card. And are you eager to see Jericho and Omega?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think they were really, really smart about how they promoted it last week. I talked a lot about that with Lance Storm and on the flagship show last week. We spent a lot of time talking about the Omega and Jericho approach at that press conference and the angle the night before. I loved it. And I thought it was really savvy to take. Kenny Omega's had such phenomenal, you know, 5-star-plus matches in the last couple of years. For Jericho to go in and try to top it or be compared to that, maybe he can, you know, be in that category. But I would rather see them reframe it. And they've done this great job reframing it as this heated grudge match. And it's about violence. And it, as Mega puts it in the great Japanese to English, back to Japanese translation language, it won't be a gentleman's battle. It'll be a fight. And I thought the framing of that was really savvy, because I think what people are going to look forward to now is something that feels different than just a classic wrestling match. It's a heel and a face with a grudge. And I think Jericho can be, at this point in his career, really at any point in his career, great at that. But I think it's for Kenny Omega to be in a co-main event with that approach is going to give him a chance to show some diversity of match style against somebody like Jericho, who is as respected as anyone when it comes to the art of putting a match together and telling that story in the ring. I think Kenny's going to come out of this better, a better performer, having had the experience of working a top-level match against Jericho, framed as it was last week. What did you think of that, Jim, the press conference?
I liked it. You know, I talked to Chris last Monday, the night after the angle where Kenny got bloodied, and then the next day was the press conference. Between the angle and the press conference, Chris and I had a conversation here on my show, and, you know, he's really all over the creator of this thing. He's the general of that army, and he's steering the ship. I know this from my experience, and this may sound, you know, somebody that's a big fan of New Japan or somebody that's a big Kenny Omega fan is going to probably think I'm stirring the crap. I'm not. Over the years, in my experience, the two guys have got to have an understanding to be safe and unselfish and go over things that they think that they want to try to work in the storytelling. But once all that preliminary stuff has been completed, once you get in the ring and the bell sounds, this is Jericho's show. The heel should call the match, because at the end of the day, I'm thinking the babyface is going to win. So the more stronger you can make Jericho and the better flow the match has, And he's the one that should be, I believe he's the guy that should be dictating the flow. He's got the most experience, the most big game matches, the WrestleManias, all this stuff. And he's a bright son of a gun. Omega should look at this thing as, man, all I got to do now is just go out there and execute. Because he can damn sure do that, big time.
Yeah.
And he's also a good strategist. Don't doubt about that. But you can't have two generals. And there's only room at the front of the line for one guy. And that one, the front of the line meaning, who's going to call the match? Who's going to steer the bus? And I think it should be Jericho for the obvious reasons of experience and not only tenure of years, but also how the heel leads the story. But I like the way they've done their business. And for somebody to say that this match will never happen again, if it draws the way they think it's going to draw, people will be falling all over themselves to get them to do another one.
Yeah.
What about, New Japan's going to have a live show in Long Beach in March. Interesting. They've got more tickets to sell. Interesting possibilities, all I'm saying. I don't know. How do I know?
I agree. I mean, saying it's to promote it as the one and only time it'll ever happen, it's a good way to sell tickets. It's also a good way to have fans lose faith in you if you break your word on that. That said, sometimes you can make the plausible case you meant it when you said it, but the demand is so great that we're going to give the fans what they want, even if it breaks our word that it was going to be a one-time-only match. If you frame it right and that demand is genuine, I think you can get away with it not too often, every now and then.
I just think it's good business to have that have a return match in their back pocket if when they want to use it. It's like having an annuity. It's there. You paid for it. You already did the angles. You already had the match. Now you're going to promote the return. So who knows? I think it's going to be awesome. I'm going to call it with Josh Barnett on because we both re-signed our contracts with Access. We're going to do that the morning of January the 5th, Thursday, January 5th in L.A., and then it's going to be part of all that stuff we do there is going to be part of a three-hour special on Saturday night. So that's a very ambitious production schedule for somebody that doesn't do that. That's not their bailiwick. You know, their music and movies, and they have their MMA on Friday nights. So they're trying to build, as you can see, and invest in the New Japan band. I'm not so sure that those that watch New Japan World and are follow the New Japan product closely, Wade, I don't know that sometimes they actually understand how viable Access TV has been in creating name identity for the New Japan brand with that primetime slot every Friday night. So some down the road, people are going to find it. Anyway, I'm looking forward to that whole weekend. It's going to be great. Hopefully following a big Rose Bowl victory for my Sooners, the George Bulldogs. Speaking of Vince, because if it hadn't been for Vince, the contract would not have been done at Access TV, which I really appreciate in a lot of ways. But what are your initial thoughts on the privately funded business, the Alpha Entertainment, as we've read? I've not talked to one soul at WWE about this matter. Whatever I know is probably I've known less than you, I'm thinking, because I know what's just kind of been out there on the internet here, there, and yon. How did you take that announcement, and what do you think it means to the big picture of WWE?
Well, I think if you look at the context of the XFL and how that went, I think there's two key factors. One, and the smaller factor, is the wrestlers were upset that they felt at a time that Vince McMahon's full attention was needed after the high of the Monday Night War era. And all the money that came in, they needed Vince's attention on the product. And you can speak to this better than I can, but I'm telling you what I heard from people. And it felt people perceived, whether it was accurate or not, that the XFL became a focus of Vince that came at the expense of the wrestling product. So that's one thing. But I think the financial aspect bothered some people. Wait a second, all the profits from our hard work is going for this long shot venture because Vince wants to, for whatever reason, get involved in something else.
Well, that didn't happen. I promise you that did not happen, because I was doing the payroll. The only thing that Vince collaborated with me on was these pay-per-views, and we used the same formula, the same monies. Nothing changed. Nothing. I swear. And I got no reason to lie to you. What the hell? I'm telling you the truth.
No.
But so that money didn't have an issue there, but I can see how they would think that, perhaps. No doubt.
And that's the thing. The thinking was, well, wait a second. We're getting paid this much, but there's that much extra to go start some XFL league. Again, I'm not speaking at the moment because it's an hour conversation, like about the fairness of it or the accuracy of it. But what he's done, and this is kind of building up to a compliment, is by saying it's this other company. He's telling WWE wrestlers, employees, stockholders, hey, this is something I'm trying off to the side. And I think that's smart to avoid any perception that some money that belongs in other places is going in the wrong way. Number two, Vince's personality is such where I get the sense he sees this as something incomplete in his life that he'd like to fix. And if the opportunity is there or the inspiration is there to look into it, and it's a very broad statement WWE put out, that he's looking into not restarting the XFL, but just sports ventures, maybe his own, maybe in line with the NFL, very broad. But Vince McMahon deciding he wants to be part of that club of sports owners or league presidents doesn't surprise me.
Well, let me tell you this. Excuse me, but he grew up in Carolina. Yep. He's a North Carolinian. The owner of the Carolina Panthers is going to sell their team after the season.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, could it be? Is there anything to that? Now, I've not talked to anyone, but I'm looking at it's the NFL, a franchise in the National Football League, is generally a really, really good investment. And it comes with a lot of clout and a lot of credibility, a lot of options to make money. If you're a marketer and you can do this little fine-tuning, you can have that football team like Jerry Jones, who's actually a friend of Vince's, associate, they talk. Jerry Jones has done that at AT&T Stadium. So that's just throwing it out there. I don't have any idea, and I'm interested to be absolutely crazy. And Vince may want to do something on his completely sell his own ship, everything. That could happen too. But I'm thinking that what it does, here's what it does for me. It tells me that he's got great energy at 72. Tells me that he has really developed an amazing amount of confidence in Paul Levesque, because it's obvious to me, Wade, that on just workload-wise, hours in the day, and even he can't make more hours, and that is that it looks as if Triple H, Paul Levesque, would have a bigger role in the overall picture of things. And I really am comfortable with him managing the wrestling side. Really, I am. I think he's going to be the guy anyway. It's a wait-and-see thing, but I'm really curious, and I got to believe that Vince is going to invest this money. He's done a lot of research going in. There's been a lot of money spent, I bet, already on data, research. I find it very intriguing. I don't find it as negative as some, because I don't think it right now, Vince is a key guy, always will be, but he was really the key guy in the Attitude Era. And I was right there side by side with him, so is Kevin Dunn. I just believe that his staff is bigger. He's got a lot of good people there on that wrestling side, and his son-in-law is doing a hell of a job. He's got Shane back here doing some work, and his daughter's, very visible. I don't know how much better you would think the wrestling business side would be until that group is given a chance to see where they're going to take it. That doesn't bother me as far as the wrestling side is concerned.
I think it's a great point. I think Triple H has shown in NXT. I said I probably philosophically side with Jim Cornette over the Young Bucks stylistically, but I'm less, hard and fast about my way being the only way that can work. Triple H and what he's done in NXT just checks so many boxes for what I think is a foundationally timeless set of fundamentals that make pro wrestling work at its ideal in its ideal presentation. I love little details that the little details and the big broad strokes of how NXT presents the product, and that's Triple H's vision and the vision of people that he trusts and listens to and helps him. So I am not at all fearful of Triple H taking over more of the creative side and the big picture side. That said, Vince McMahon has a knack for turning WrestleMania into a big show and having those real peak moments that feel gigantic. And you've seen it. There's been panics over the years. What's WrestleMania going to be? And in the end, almost always, he finds a way to find something special and hit that crescendo. And so that's the one area where Triple H isn't as tested, and it's where Vince is really shown that ability to make WrestleMania huge. So other than that, and I think Triple H would probably be fine, it's just not proven. But in terms of what I've seen with NXT and the TakeOver specials and the weekly TV show, if there's more, the differences between NXT and the Raw and SmackDown product, if Raw and SmackDown become more like NXT, but with the challenge of 5 hours a week live instead of 1 hour a week pre-taped, if those can be translated, I'm excited about where WWE goes. So in this case, yeah, Vince ends up a little more preoccupied with something that's non-wrestling. I think there's probably some people who think that might be a good thing for the product, as long as Vince keeps an eye on things.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. And I think, as you mentioned, Paul Levesque's done a phenomenal job. I've had the opportunity to work a couple of those NXT TakeOver shows. They're just fun as hell, man. It's just more relaxed and more focused. And I just really enjoy the fact they bring it physically. So it's a wait-and-see situation. Interesting story, to say the least. And we'll keep our eye on that matter. But I think some good things can come out of it in a lot of ways. Really, it intrigues me. And, hey, look, if he needs a football guy, I'm available. I got some free time. What did you think of the Ring of Honor pay-per-view on Friday night that kind of created a little bit of that we mentioned earlier in the Twitterverse thing? Overall in the show, I always have said that the toughest thing to do in wrestling, arguably, is to close a Ring of Honor pay-per-view in a one-on-one match, because by the time they get to you, they have seen everything. And I guess, you know, you can make the argument, well, we do it that way because it pushes the other guys. They're main eventers, they got to be able to close. But they're not making it easy on them, obviously. So I guess there's the two sides of the coin. But point being is, what were your thoughts on the show? And I was surprised at the finish in the main event.
I was surprised at the finish in the main event, too. I was a little late getting to the show because I actually snuck in some Christmas shopping Friday night. But I was going to make the point earlier and didn't, but I will do it now regarding the Young Bucks and that approach. When I say, hey, if the fans like it, and you're giving the fans what they want, then it's okay. I think you have to put there's a caveat to that, because every match isn't on its own, doesn't live in its own universe. Every match is part of a larger painting that, for a pay-per-view, is a three-hour show, generally 3 hours, 4 hours for the bigger shows. And what you just said is very important for promoters putting shows together to keep in mind. There should be an ebb and a flow to a show. And I like there being some restrictions that wrestlers put on themselves or the promoters put on wrestlers to not overdo it on certain things so that the crowd's not burned out by the main event.
Exactly. You build your whole show around the main event. If you're not, that's a very strange way of booking, is all I'm saying. But the main event's the closest show's got to be the be-all, end-all. And I just believe that when you say, well, put some restrictions on the guys prior to that, I got no problem with that. Because if you're that good a worker and you're that talented, you take what tools you're allowed to play with in your toolbox and you make it work. And if you have to have concrete bumps and chair shots and everything else, then maybe you're not as good as you're not good enough to be here. One thought.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that's where there can be some selfishness on the part of some wrestlers wanting to get their spots in on the undercard.
That's what it is, too, selfishness.
Yeah, and not everybody understands that or thinks about it in that way. They're like, I want to sell my T-shirts. I want to build my social network following. I want to earn some indie dates. I want to steal the show.
Absolutely.
And I understand that. I mean, you got to look out for yourself in this business, but the promoter who hires you and pays you ultimately should have that larger vision and enforce it. And that should be part of the package that makes you attractive to other promoters if you're a free agent out there making a go of it. And so I think, and I've had this complaint about ROH for a while, that there's a lot of matches that on their own are really fun to watch, but when you watch an entire three-hour show, it can be an overwhelming, exhausting, discombobulating, mind-numbing event sometimes where there's so much blood, so much violence, so many gigantic spots, and so many different styles on display going 100 miles an hour that I sort of, when I'm done with it, I want to cleanse myself with an NXT TakeOver special. Because going back to Triple H and that philosophy, I really, really, really like what they do in terms of the pacing of those shows. Every match is part of a canvas that takes into account everything else that happens on that show. And I think that's an area where ROH philosophically differs from me. I think they just have this balls out, all action, adrenaline rush approach. And I think that it does sometimes lead to a flat feeling at the end, especially when you have more conventional wrestlers like Cody and Dalton going out there and trying to build around, you know, a blood spot and working an injury and building to a finish that, based on what happened earlier in the night, sort of felt flat, I think. You know, the crowd was shocked by Dalton winning, but the near falls and the buildup, it couldn't compete with what they had seen earlier with the Briscoes or what they had seen in the previous match even. So that's a critique that I have, and it sounds like you kind of share that.
I do, absolutely. Folks, see, Wade's on Twitter at the Wade Keller, and he also has a at PW Torch. So follow him there on Twitter. You know, he's at Podcast One, just like this show. If you listen to ours, you should listen to his and vice versa. And he's been kind enough to help us support ours, and we're helping him with his. And but I appreciate you jumping on, and hope you have a great holiday. Everybody's healthy and happy in your household. And I really thank you for joining us. I've been reading your stuff for, what, 30 years?
Yeah, 30 years this October.
Yeah, I guess 30. It felt 30, about 30, a long time.
Yeah. Yes.
So I was in my 30s when I started reading Wade Keller.
And wow.
And now look at my sad ass. I'm old. Hey, Wade, thanks, buddy. I appreciate you very much. Have a great holiday, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Anytime, Jim. Always a pleasure.
It's good to catch up with Wade Keller, Pro Wrestling Torch, at The Wade Keller on Twitter. Always has a lot to say. Very informed guy. And we will be talking soon to another dude that's about as opposite as Wade Keller as you can get. Conan, my friend Carlos, is going to join us, talk about all his gigs. He's got a lot of them, folks. But before we do, I got to thank one of our sponsors who helps make this podcast free and possible, and that's TrueCar. Well, here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. I bet you didn't know that a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. How about that? I bet you didn't know that removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. And not eating a bean burrito in your car drastically reduces the risk of finding stray beans in your vehicle. And gas. Ready for one more tip you might not know about TrueCar? That is, TrueCar also helps people get used cars. Quality used cars. That's right, TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid for the same basic vehicle, so they know if they're getting a good deal or not. They're always more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. It's that simple. Cutting to the chase here. When you're ready to buy a new car or a used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. I guarantee it. Right, Gordon? Well, you're right again, JR. It's the some features are not available in all states.
This is Bulldog Bob Brown. If you want to get
just read it.
If you want to get over and stay over, you should check out the new episode of Killing the Town every Tuesday at podcast1.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes. Hey, Geigel, what the hell is iTunes?
Okay, folks, before we welcome Conan to the podcast, to the Ross Report, that's what you're listening to, and I thank you for that. I do want to remind you very quickly to hit that subscribe button at Apple Podcasts, because if you do, it'll help us with our ratings. It will automatically download into the device that you choose every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. It's free to download, free to subscribe, piece of cake. So check it out. I will thank you very much. I would suggest maybe leaving a 5-star rating if you choose, and a review at Apple Podcasts. I thank you for that, and it was a big help to us. I can tell you that right now. It takes about a minute. And we thank you. Subscribe to The Ross Report on Apple Podcasts with our thanks.
This is The Ross Report.
At Conan5150 on Twitter. If you don't know, You should know. You should follow him. What's up, brother?
Yo, what's up, JR?
How have you been? Are you feeling good? You look good last time I saw you.
Yeah, I'm great, bro. I'm just like you. I'm loving life, and look at all the opportunities you're getting. I've gotten a lot of opportunities. This is a fun time to be in the business.
Sure, you have. Well, it is. How are you enjoying podcasting, keeping it 100 with Conan? I see a lot of real good feedback on your show. How'd you come up with the format, and how are you enjoying doing it?
Well, what happened was I was working with this guy called Court Bauer at MLW, and he had brought me in once for an interview, and he got really good feedback, so I started my own show. And I was pretty raw with my language, and I just really didn't, cause I knew I wasn't going back to WWE or, you know, WCW was gone. And so, the only people around that time, JR, I think that were doing podcasts might have been Cole Cabana. I think Meltzer might have had, I'm not sure, but, so basically, nobody was charging for podcasts back at that time. And I told Court, bro, I think that what we have here is kind of special and people will pay for it. And so we got in, people did pay for it. And then Jericho heard me. And Jericho said, I'm going to start my own network on Podcast One. Would you come do your show there? And here's the other thing that I think that really separated me from a lot of the people at the beginning. Like, I don't just talk wrestling. I talk pop culture, sports, you know, politics, everything.
You're a Renaissance man. Carlos, you're a miracle.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm just trying to put you over, brother.
I know you are, and I'm not letting you. Bro, I have to tell you this real quick, because you have no idea how much of a humongous, maybe not as much as you, but I'm damn close, of a humongous college football fan I am of the Miami Hurricanes. So I know how big it is for you to be facing Georgia, who's on a roll. Unfortunately, you ran into Iowa State. Yeah. But I did love that shootout with, was it Texas A&M? They were like 62, 52, something like that.
Oh, you
remember that game?
Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Oh, you know. We call that Bedlam. That's our Bedlam series. So,
yeah, that was awesome. And I'm also looking forward to, because this is what I predict, the Alabama-Clemson game. I think that's the game where Alabama is turning the keys over to Clemson as the number one school in the nation. And, of course, my Hurricanes against Wisconsin, so I'm pumped.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. I'm glad to see the U back in the game. I really am. See, when Oklahoma was down in the late 90s, mid-90s, it didn't seem right. And it didn't seem right because of money and blowing up the leagues that the Saturday after Thanksgiving, we're not playing Nebraska. That doesn't seem right either. So
doesn't seem right for me. I'm from Miami, that the Orange Bowl isn't around. Let me tell you something that I also love about college football games. Like, for example, I love traditions and I love mascots. And I'm going to start with you. I love the Sooner Schooner. I love, you know, I love the horses coming out with the chuck wagon. And I love how they're two white ponies and one's called Boomer and the other one is called Sooner.
Yep.
You know, I'm a big fan of animals like the Georgia Bulldog,
Ugga,
Ralphie the Buffalo, that Texas Steer Bevo. I love how when like Ralphie comes out, he's accompanied by all these handlers who try to make sure the beast doesn't get loose and trample on anybody.
Yeah, happy holidays, ladies and gentlemen. Happy holidays out there. I was talking to our mutual friend, Raphael Morphy.
He's awesome.
He's the best.
Fellow Cuban.
Yeah, he is a Cuban. You're right.
Well, when you see somebody from your own ilk, you're happy to see him. Hey, you're Cuban, you know.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you one guy that surprised me. I didn't know that you had known it. Cody Rhodes, because Dusty was married with a Cuban lady.
Michelle, Cody's mother, is Cuban.
Yeah, I didn't know Cody.
Yeah, so Cody's got a little Cubanality in him.
Yeah, a little Scarface in them.
Yeah. Right. How many promotions do you work with? Yeah.
Right now I work with two, with Impact and one that just started called Arrow Lucha.
The Arrow Lucha show had a taping about a week ago, folks, in Nashville that sold out the arena there. I saw some glimpses of it. It looked really good on television. It looked like a good TV shoot. Now, I didn't see the matches, but the look of it, I thought, and then I talked to Raphael, and he said my man Keith Mitchell's on site, so that made me feel like somebody was there and knows what they're doing, because he does.
Good old Keith.
He can make more.
Texas.
He can make more or less than anybody I know. But what'd you think of the taping? Are you involved in the creative of that, Carlos? Is that your gig there?
Yeah. Basically booking the talent and putting together the storylines with Vince Russo. And so basically, you know, we're having a big shift in wrestling, and you've seen all of the noise and all of the chatter between Cormier, the Young Bucks, and all that. And Jim, are you an announcer for NXT now?
No.
Were you an announcer at any time or no?
I have done a couple of matches at the NXT TakeOver, and I did some stuff for them early for SCW, but I don't know. I might have been on some early episodes of NXT, Carlos, but not anymore. I mean, Mauro Ranallo does that.
Okay, but I wanted to ask you this question, because you come from another era, as do I. Okay, and you see all the arguments. What do you think when you see modern wrestling is what I would call it?
I believe it's like food, and I like a lot of different kinds of food, man. And I also respect others' rights to express what they like or they don't like. I will say this at the end of the day, for our brothers and sisters in the wrestling business, I want everybody to be successful. There's no reason for me to have an agenda based on my goddamn ego or anything else to wish anything ill on our fellow wrestling people. So right now, I believe it's the best time that I've been in the business ever. It's the best time to be a fan. It's the best time to be making money off of it. So I got no problem with that. Here's what I worry about. Tell you what, real simple, my deal is. Wrestlers that take an extraordinary amount of risk, like taking big bumps on the apron or on the concrete floor or into the states. Right. The more you do it, the more your chances go up you're going to hurt yourself. We know the insurance in the wrestling business is non-existent, pretty much.
Right.
So I don't understand the volume of those bumps, and most of the time, or sometimes, they don't even lead to the finish. So that bothers me a little bit, Carlos, quite frankly.
Right.
And the other thing I don't like, because there's a lot of things I do like, but one thing I don't like is when a match looks over choreographed.
Right.
There's not a misstep along the way. It's one, two, three, dip. One, two, three. You know what I mean? It's like a dance.
Right, right.
And I like a little bit more choppy, a little bit more coarse,
more
impromptu, man.
So this is what I think. I think that, you got to let horses run. You got to let the eagles fly. And when you tell a young guy not to be a risk taker in an era of risk taking and where everything, you look at skateboarding and it's early, it was very rudimentary. The boards and the tricks were just as rudimentary and everything starts evolving. And I do think that these young guys that are doing all these crazy moves, because that's what the fans are paying to see. And there is an audience for it. Is when they go up to the main event guys don't work like that, and they tell a story and they slow it down and, Ray doesn't. And as you get older, you work smarter, but you can't tell a young guy to slow down because they're not going to. Because I remember when I first broke in, Jim, I used to do, I started in Mexico. I started Lucha Libre. So I was bing, 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 no psychology. You can imagine when I went to WWE in 1990, and they were just looking at me like, where did this come from? And I was actually called a jumping bee, Mexican jumping bee, and nobody knew what was going on. And so I just think that a lot of the young guys, when they were watching the business, they got tired of seeing rest holds and, long matches when they could have quick matches and tag into another guy and he comes in and it's a quick match and it's always, moving. But I do think that as they get older, they'll learn to work smarter due to their age, injuries, and because the main event style isn't that style.
You make some really valid points that I can understand. And the thing is, Carlos, is that I think that along the way, and you're so right about you got to let horses run. You can't restrict these guys. But what I'd like to do, I'd like to challenge talents to say on a house show run where you say, okay, I want to finish in 12 minutes. We need 20. No, you're going to do it in 12 minutes.
Right.
And I don't want these three things to happen. Now, put your match together however you want, but this is your outline for the night. Because here's what you are. You're a performer. I'm the producer. And the, and the production company pays you. So this this is what we need for you to do this night. And tomorrow night, it may be something entirely different. That's how you learn. If you tell young guys, give them your advice, Carlos, they're going to listen to you. Now, they might not listen to me because I'm an old fart,
They would listen to you. They would listen to you.
So I think you're right. They will slow down eventually.
Jim, I'm just like you. There's nothing from a creative standpoint, and this is the way I used to try to book in AAA, and you'll see this is the way I'll be booking Aero Lucha. There's nothing better to me than a well-layered, peeling the onion with a couple swerves, slow-burning storyline. And that's what I love to do. And that's what I do usually for the main event or guys that are in a feud. But everybody else, I just let them entertain the fans.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
So you got the taping in Nashville. It was very successful. It looked good, as we said. And I heard some of the matches, nobody complained about the matches. So that's very rare, quite frankly. Well, that's a good sign. But were you up there in the 5 or 6 day Canadian shoot for Impact?
Oh, yes, I was. Yes, I was. We went somewhere else where the people were fresh. They were ready to go. They were pumped up. I heard that they had paid people to come in as if that's the only wrestling or TV show that's ever done that. But I can tell you this. I will tell you this. There were a lot, not a little, but a lot of fans that knew all the storylines and all the catchphrases. So there were a lot of guys that were not paid to go. And just that raw energy, motivates you. Plus the fans were very nice. Like after the show, everybody went to the same place and the fans were just chilling with the boys. And it was a good time.
Well, what do you think of the new group there, the entourage of the Canadian?
Oh, it's a Canadian conspiracy started by Chris Jericho, and it includes the Scott Tuggles D'Amour, Lord Cyrus, and Lance. I love Ice Curling Storm.
So, Carlos, you got a Canadian team. Does that mean that the office may end up being in Toronto and you maybe do more tapings in Canada?
That could happen because I know that when I was talking to Ed Nordholm, he was telling me that they saved a lot of money, like on tax breaks and stuff like that, from filming in Canada. So that could be a possibility.
Yeah, not a bad idea. That's why people make a lot of movies in Vancouver.
Right.
So you got the Impact thing going. The next, how do you like doing the 4 or 5 days in a row thing? Is it better in Orlando or is it still challenging?
It's just, it's hard because I'm not used to being on the road like that. Now, remember, I was on the road and so were you. You know, there were times back in the days in Mexico and even in WCW when we were on the road 30 days straight. Ooh. And that was, you know, a lot of times. And you rest a day or two, if you can even call it rest, and you're back on that grind. And, you know, it's almost like becomes ingrained and you wake up, you know, get the car, you know, go to the hotel, get a workout in. You know, it was just the same thing every day, different city. You didn't even know where you were, what day it was or what happened. And so me now going on the road for 4 days, it's very taxing for me. I have a fun time because I don't have to worry about booking or writing promos, producing or none of that stuff. I just go kind of like Paul Heyman does. I just go in, I cut a promo, and I dip.
You get to create your own copy too, right?
Right, right. They're real. It would be very hard for them to write my character, to tell you the truth. Yeah. So they kind of give me, they do give me a lot of, liberties.
Well, I would give you a couple of bullet points that we want to make sure you get in and tell you how much time you had and let you have at it. If it wasn't good, we'd talk about it later and we'd fix it.
Right.
Or we'd add something to it. I wouldn't try to stymie your creativity because that's what one of the things they hired you for. Because you ain't going to go out there and take a bunch of Hurricane Ranas and Topes and all that stuff anymore.
I don't need to.
No.
I don't need to. So my whole thing is like anything else, you know, when you're a heel, you try to get heat. And when you're a babyface, you just say stuff to get over. It's harder to be a babyface, man, because the crowd is just very different nowadays. And if you come off of anything phony or you know what I'm saying, they'll jump all over you.
Yeah. I think a lot of heels that I've seen in the several companies, they had rather be cool, Carlos, than a villain. In my opinion, in today's wrestling world, that many heels had rather be cool heels than be a real, true villain that people pay money to see them lose and get their ass whipped.
Right, bro. We have that problem in Mexico, too. You know, the heels actually ask for applause sometimes. And I'm like, bro, the only thing you're missing are the pom-poms. Remember Chief Jay used to say that. That was awesome. And I always tell the heels, bro, how would you like it if you were a babyface and the heel is dividing the crowd to see how many people like you and how many people like him? Go over there and beat his ass and get some heat, you know? And so, yeah, people want to be liked. You know, they want to be cool heels like a Flair or Hall and Nash or something like that. But even Flair knew how to get heat when he had to. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Sure did. Right. I think a lot of guys, they may believe, and they may have, it may be true. Right. A lot of them are supplementing their income with their gimmicks. And so they may believe that if I'm a real badass heel and I have no redeeming social qualities, it might affect my merchandising.
And the people are smart enough to know that you're doing a persona, and if you do it right, they're going to buy your merch.
Bingo.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, hell yeah.
It's incredible. And so, let me tell you who had real heat, JR. Guys that people perceived shouldn't be where they are. Jinder Mahal had real heat, more heat than anybody. You know what I'm saying? Because people were like, well, this guy wasn't used very well his last time around or any time he was in WWE. And all of a sudden he's up here. And, you know, in today's world of, you know, great work rate, when you got to, you know, be in the same company as AJ Styles and some of these other guys, Samoa Joe and all them, you know, they don't like his work rate, you know, real heat. The guy named Corbin?
Baron Corbin. Yeah.
He had some real heat too. You know what I'm saying? Because people thought, you know, Nakamura should have gotten it. You know what I'm saying?
WWE has done a nice job, and the Paul Levesque and William Regal specifically, and others too, obviously, but they got a good talent roster. They got some of the best workers in the world.
They did a great job.
Who do you think's better, Carlos, bell to bell than AJ Styles?
I don't know. AJ Styles, you know, I worked with him many years at TNA. We actually feuded with them at LAX against Christian Pings at AJ. And you knew that he was going to be really special. And plus, he's a nice kid. So I'm happy for him. I don't know. I'm a big AJ Styles fan. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, Nakamura when he was in New Japan. Big fan of, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Samoa Joe, Brock Lesnar. you know, those are the guys that I really like. I'll tell you the most over guy to me on either show. Are you ready for this guy?
Yep.
Elias.
Really?
That is my favorite character. I love the way he comes out, buries the crowd, sings a song, burying the crowd. His delivery, his timing is incredible, bro. You know, he's really funny to me. Obviously, they haven't put him in any good matches where he means anything. I mean, it really buried him when he did that angle where, like, Jordan or Gabe or whatever his name is, you know, the guy that's supposed to be Kurt Angle's son.
Yeah.
Came out and was, like, throwing food at him. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yeah, I did see that. I didn't quite get that one.
Yeah, that was very Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like Elias. He's my favorite character, believe it or not. Who's your favorite character right now, or who do you enjoy watching?
Man, AJ is just, I haven't seen him have a bad match, man. With more refined talents, he's just takes it off the page. He's creative. He's innovative. He works snug. He sells so well. And a lot of guys that have no self-esteem or self-confidence believe, Carlos, and I think you'd probably agree with this, is that selling is a great thing. Learning to sell in levels is in degrees is a great thing. That's the missing piece to me in a lot of things. When a lot of these kids work real fast and they take the big wonderful bumps we were talking about earlier, they oftentimes their matches don't sell what's done to them. So you let the guy execute a hell of a move and then you sell it for like maybe 20, 15, 20, 30 seconds. It makes no sense.
So let me tell you, because that's the thing, bro. See, I grew up on American wrestling, right? Like, I didn't grow up wanting to be a wrestler or nothing like that. So I grew up on American wrestling. I followed it every now and then. Then I came back to it. And then one day when I was 23 years old, I went to Tijuana to watch a wrestling match. And I was absolutely blown away by all the acrobatics and the masks and the blood and the just the rabid fans. It was, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow. You know, this is much more exciting than American wrestling, because American wrestling had the rest hold. And, you know, just it was just very slow compared to the Lucha Libre style. So what you have to understand, so, you know, when I went to Mexico, I had to learn a new style. And then when I came back to the United States, I had to be deprogrammed when I went to WCW, because I only knew Lucha Libre. So when you watch Mexican wrestling, you can't watch it like if you're watching American wrestling, because there are matches where there is no psychology. There is no selling. It's just a match just to show athleticism and entertain the people, almost like a circus. You know, and then there's the match that there is a feud and there is a storyline and there is selling. Mm-hmm. But other matches don't really involve selling. That's why when people get mad at it, Mexicans look at it like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like American going to England and he's never seen soccer. What the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
Or you going to Japan and asking, why doesn't anybody eat with a fork? Well, we use chopsticks here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's just a different thing. And you have to kind of open your mind a little bit to the fact that some matches to Lucha Libre, we don't care about the selling.
Speaking of Lucha Libre, you've got a great friendship with a young man I think the world of, and I helped bring to WWE, and Rey Mysterio.
Right.
You guys are almost like brothers, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. We are. Yeah.
I love that guy. I really do. You're really such an overachiever in a business that normally would suppress people of his size. But that just tells you how good he is.
Think about this. We've seen great wrestlers, great promos, guys that people steal moves from, guys that steal people lines from, famous matches. But how many guys actually revolutionized a sport? Because he revolutionized wrestling.
In what respect do you think?
Brought in that high-flying style that is all the rage right now.
Gotcha.
You look at NXT, you look at 205, you look at most of wrestling. A lot of it is Lucha Libre influenced high style wrestling that him and Juventud and Psicosis and all them. When I see all the wrestlers, that almost all the wrestlers, when they come up to me, they say, I used to watch your tapes. I used to watch your tapes. I used to watch your tapes. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so he was a guy that I think, you know, really revolutionized wrestling for smaller guys.
Got it. Yeah.
And you even see bigger guys doing high flying moves nowadays. And that's that Lucha influence that he started with Juventud and Psicosis. You don't think so?
No, I see what you're saying. The smaller guys, he's way ahead of his time, way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And like you said, he's influential in a lot of ways. Ring attire, the mask is unique. He always spent money and put a lot of thought in what he looked like. He sells. He's maybe the most empathetic seller I've ever seen. Like, you just like, hey, I think he already hurt. I think he's right. I think something's wrong with Ray.
Right.
You know, he's just that good. And so many guys just got to remember, man, that selling is an art form. And like I used to tell guys, if you can't throw a punch, don't use it in a match. Just don't do it until you can do it well. Don't practice in front of the paying customers until you think you can do it well, especially on television. House shows, okay, try it. But TV, no. Ray's just he could sell and sell, and people would think, my God. And then he never died. But he never died. And so you tell that to a guy. Some kids just say, well, you got to learn to sell, kid, but don't die. Then now you've lost them. They ain't got a damn clue. What do you mean?
Right. Exactly. And the other thing about Ray is that he broke the blueprint to what a professional wrestler should look like. You know what I'm saying? And so it just opened up the floodgates to what we see now. There's never been as many minorities, whether it's, you know, as there is right now in wrestling. There's never been as many women. There's never been as smaller size wrestlers as there are right now in the business.
You're right. And Ray can... Ray's the guy that led the way on that deal. I can tell you this.
Yeah.
If you're under 6 feet tall and you're making a living, next time you see Rey Mysterio, you should say thank you.
And for all of you guys that want to see another guy, I don't know how much you saw of him in Mexico, but a lot of Americans go to Mexico and they're like, damn, we don't know how to work here. The style is different. I'm going to tell you two guys to watch. Just watch them and you'll be able to work in Mexico. Love Machine and Eddie Guerrero as a tag team. Incredible.
Wow. Yeah. This is legendary. They had chemistry you couldn't book.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you were them then, Carlos?
Yeah. Well, the backstory, I'll tell you the backstory real quick. Love Machine, I had met him in WCW when I first met you. I don't think you remember, 89.
Yeah.
And you actually called me one day, right? I remember it was right around New Year's, and you had called me and you said that you were going to put me and Brian Pillman in a tag team together, but Oli had just got let go, and you were waiting on the new booker.
Right. Yeah. See, he was a unique cat, man. I didn't know we could keep you heels, but I thought you could be cooler than hell and could live vicariously through you. But I loved Art Barr and Eddie. Art Barr, Art Barr was getting over, too, in WCW when he had a lead.
Right. So let me tell you, I met Art Barr when I went there for that Pat O'Connor Memorial Cup. Remember when they brought all those teams from around the world for a tag team tournament?
Yep.
Okay, well, obviously I went representing Mexico, and Norman Smiley was representing England with Chris Adams, and Art Barr was doing the juicer gimmick, okay? So, you know, he got heat for that gimmick, and they had to let him go, right, because people started writing in. And so I brought him and Love Machine to Mexico. Eddie was already in Mexico, and Eddie was, believe it or not, was wearing a mask. He was wrestling for Arena Mexico. And I was like, Eddie, why are you wearing a damn mask? Nobody in your family ever wore a mask. He goes, I don't know, but I don't like it. I go, look how much money I'm making in AAA. I go, jump over with us and take the mask off in the middle of the ring. He goes, I can't do that. I go, bro, your dad was a rebel. Chavo was a rebel. You don't need that mask. And he went on TV and took off the mask. And he goes, I'm not Mascara Magica. I'm Eddie Guerrero, the son of Gory Guerrero, the brother of Chavo Mondo and Hector. And my uncle is Javier Yanez, which is like this big Mexican legend. The place just erupted, you know. And so I introduced Art to Eddie. I knew they would get along, but I never thought they'd be that great a tag team they ended up being, because they were phenomenal.
Yeah, great chemistry. You had a great idea there, Carlos. But you know, those two guys were luckily able to click, and man, they clicked big time. There was one time I really believed that they were the best tag team in the world anywhere.
Yes, they were.
What do you think about the old school booking philosophies that Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega have utilized to build their Wrestle Kingdom 12 match on January 4th. I've been following it. I talked to Chris last week on the show after he had done the run-in in the arena and before the press conference. I've been kind of captivated by it, kind of nostalgic in a way.
Right. I love it. I love it because that's what I grew up watching. So did you. You know what I used to love? I don't know if they used to do this like in Bill Watts territory, but they used to do this a lot like I grew up watching a lot of L.A. Olympic, you know, Olympic Auditorium.
Yeah.
And I would always love when the commentator was like, you know, announcing somebody, and another guy would just come from behind and beat him up during his own promo, you know. Yeah. And I used to love that type of stuff. But where they would have the regional, they would say, coming to your town next week, San Bernardino, Hollywood, San Diego, like, and then you'd have like you'd have promos just for that market. Remember that? Because they did that in WWE.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We did it in Mid-South every week.
Right. Right. I love that. And so, you know, in Mexico, I have those instruments, you know, because I definitely believe in red equals green, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I love watching the blood. I love watching them do what they're doing and showing that wrestlers can be creative, too. You know, sometimes, and that's one of the problems with creative, because people are paranoid that they're not going to get the credit. And then when a wrestler comes up with a good idea, either they steal it or they don't push it through because, you know, they're afraid. But, you know, a lot of wrestlers have good ideas. And I would dare say most of the top wrestlers, you know, part of the reason they got to where they got to is because they probably had a lot of creative input.
Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt. And when you in the territories, a lot of guys would come in with the ear of the booker or the owner. Predetermined.
Right.
Or
right.
I remember the Grizzly Smith and Luke Brown were the Kentuckians.
Right.
And they
right.
they did a program with Joe Hamilton and Tom Ernesto, who were the assassins
right.
named after the
right.
Kennedy assassination. Lovely,
right.
good old wrestling. So they did that program in multiple territories. And they would
yeah.
go in, they knew what they did week one. They knew how they got themselves over. They knew how they finally got their paths crossed. And then boom,
right.
the big angle on TV, let it roll. But they almost cost McGurk his license there. I think I wrote about that in my book because of a hard way on TV that the announcer and the cameraman thought was fake until they
right.
got a close-up of this guy's bone and Jody Hamilton hard way grizzly. Anyway.
Didn't the Steiner brothers do that one time? Like Rick punched Scott for real in the eye because he needed like a black eye? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know that to say yay or
yeah,
nay.
Yeah, you would have put it past them.
No, but I would not put it. Somebody said, what happened? I said, okay, I can see that. I can sure see that.
Right. Let me ask you one question real quick. See if this frustrates you as much as it does me. Jimmy Jacobs, who used to write for Chris Jericho in WWE, okay? He's now writing for TNA. So he was on my podcast, and we had asked him, you know, how many writers they have. And he said something like 25, okay? And he even said that some guys specifically just do comedy, some guys specifically do promos, and that they're very talented guys. And I was like, well, then why is the show so bad? You know, because they do a better job of burying people than putting people over. That 50-50 booking doesn't help anybody. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And so he was telling me, you know, it's really hard to do 3 hours, you know, every week, which I'm sure it is. Get more writers or better writers, because I almost feel like, did you ever see Breaking Bad?
Oh, yeah.
Or what's the one, Game of Thrones?
Haven't got all into Game of Thrones, but I'm familiar with it.
Okay. Well, I bet you if you told them their show would be 3 hours every Sunday instead of just one, it'd still be a great show. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I just get frustrated when, you know, WWE, who invented everything, bro, you know, the vignettes, the, you know, how to get over, how to make a superstar, that a lot of times they, I feel, just don't listen to the crowd. And it's just basically because it's kind of like a party of one, right? Like you have to have Vince happy.
Vince is the boss. He's like every, he's like,
right.
he's like Bill Watts. There ain't no gray
right.
area.
Right. And it's always great to have a great leader. That's what that
is. Well,
sure.
yeah. And here's the other thing about that. In our business, where there's so damn many liars and BS artists, it was
right.
good to get an answer from somebody, a yes or a no, and know
right.
that it was a real yes or a no. And
right.
there were a lot of places I worked and with a lot of guys I worked where that wasn't always the case.
No, I know. I just think that if, I don't think, and with all due respect, bro, I know what he's brought to the plate and who he is, but I just think like a 70-year-old billionaire may not be in touch with his demo, and he should just let other people, you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's going to happen someday, obviously, and but I think he's loosening the strings of some of that. I think the building the brand of NXT is a good illustration that he's willing
yes.
to let something
right.
grow with new ideas.
Yeah, organically. You're absolutely right.
So I look at the glass half full in that regard. Hey, I want to ask you something about Rey. I just don't know. Obviously, Rey is one of the top luchadors of all time. No doubt.
Right.
Where does he rank in the top? And who are the top three in your estimation? Because I've asked guys that have knowledge of this, and you always hear El Santo. I've even had guys say Mill. But where does Rey fit in that conversation, Carlos? And who would be there with him at the top of that list?
Are we talking popularity or work rate?
Selling tickets.
Selling tickets. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rey never was a big ticket seller in Mexico because when Rey first got to Mexico, he was only 17. So we were still making him into what he became.
Mm-hmm.
In WCW, he had a huge growth period because he was in the ring. Even though the roster in 94 was incredibly talented. Like, we had all these guys that I'm going to mention were all in their 20s, and they had no injuries. La Parca, Juventud, Ray, Psychosis, Eddie Guerrero, you know, Love Machine. I mean, the talent, Heavy Metal, the talent was incredible. But they only knew how to wrestle each other, and they only knew one style. When Ray went to the United States, then he learned the American style, and he mixed it with the Mexican style. And that's kind of a hybrid that you're kind of seeing today in today's wrestling. So he wasn't a guy that was selling tickets yet in Mexico. But in popularity, just nobody's ever going to be more popular than Santo, because Santo is like Superman and Batman put together, and he was doing movies, you know, as a wrestler.
Right.
So he was super over, and he was just the type of guy that had really good bases that made him look good, and he was so over that as long as he showed up, people were happy. And then nobody's ever going to be bigger than the number two guy called Blue Demon. And so he's super iconic. He was actually Santo's partner, tag team partner in movies. Both their sons ended up having pretty big careers, and they don't talk to each other. But Santo and Blue Demon are the biggest ones. And then I would think, you know, Rey Mysterio, before all is said and done, will probably be number three.
Yeah, they're great. Boy, those are amazing talents. Very gifted men, no doubt about it. Real quick here, Jericho, Omega, do you think they're going to do bigger business than last year's Wrestle Kingdom? I do, by the way.
I'm going to tell you why I do, right?
Yep.
Because I don't think they think Jericho will come back. And if he does, it would be something that's just once a year. And I like the other wrestlers that you can see him all the time. So he becomes a special attraction, almost like they've done with Brock.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They set a goal, I read online, their goal was to sell 30,000 tickets, 30K. Now, the arena for baseball seats 55,000. So I'm assuming for wrestling, it'd probably go around 60, 65. So if that's somewhat accurate, then their goal was originally to sell half a house.
Exactly.
And I find that a little troubling, quite frankly, because I think that they should take a lead after McMahon and spend the money on the marketing and be everywhere, be ubiquitous on television, all the media, and make it an event and not necessarily a giant five-hour wrestling card.
Plus, one of the biggest things is that, you know, as you know, people are in, you know, they've always been into them, but now more than ever, you know, those dream matches that you've never seen before, you know, the first-time matchup.
Yeah.
You know, so that in Japan, the first-time matchup of Omega and Jericho, they're both from Winnipeg, you know, and then he laid out Callis. I love Callis, how he does the whole Andy Kaufman thing and wears the thing around the neck and he's wheelchaired through the airport. How awesome is that?
That's funny.
Yeah.
The only thing would be better if they gagged him.
Him and my co-host Disco Inferno. I think they're going to do good business.
I hope they do. Like I said, it's incumbent upon me at my stage of life and where I am within our business as an old timer. I get it. I'm finally in that old timer league. That I want all these guys to make a living. I want them to have the chances I've had to live my dream in the business I love. I'm still doing it. I'm for every company, man. I don't say, you know, there's a bad night at Raw, so I'm now mad at WWE, or there's a whatever on Impact Wrestling, you know, I'm mad at them. Don't be mad at them.
Right.
Support them and hang with them. All of our teams, you and I talked about Oklahoma and Georgia on January 1st.
Right.
I will be at that game. I will be there. I'm coming out on the 30th of December. I don't want to miss nothing. And somebody's going to win the game. My team might not win. That's just the way it is. Yeah. So
Georgia's on fire, bro. I think you had to have a little bit, and tell me if you didn't, a little chill ran down your spine when after Auburn kicked the holy hell out of Georgia, Georgia came back in that revenge game with that three-headed running attack, just ran all over them.
The running attack's going to keep Oklahoma's quarterback and offense on the sideline. That's where our defense has got to play above their abilities and get some three and outs and some short time possession. A time possession issue and Georgia winning that is not good news for Oklahoma's offense, because that means they ain't out on the field. And I worry
Let me
about
tell
that.
You what I'm going to put on my bucket list right now on your podcast, okay? You and me, sometime in the near future, it'll have to be next year for sure, either going to a Miami game or to Oklahoma game. And if we ever meet, we have to go.
I don't know about the tickets in Miami, but I can damn sure have Oklahoma.
All right, I got you in my hometown, that's for sure.
All right, brother. All right, hey, look, I appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah.
Conan has got a great podcast, folks. Keeping it 100 with Conan. Check it out wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a million places to listen to podcasts, and there's hell almost that many wrestling podcasts. This is a good one, and it's diverse. It's got wrestling, pop culture, and sports, a lot of good things on it. And don't blame Carlos for Disco Inferno. Just don't do it.
No.
Sometimes you've been known to give a helping hand to those in need. And, you know, Disco's Disco.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. So real quick, let me say, you can also catch me on Impact on Pop TV on Thursdays and Arrow Lucha after our successful venture in Nashville, Tennessee, which was incredible. We're going to be at the Fair Park Coliseum on the fairgrounds in Lubbock, Texas, Saturday, January 20th. Doors open at 6:30, showtime 7:30. And then on Friday, January 19th, we're going to be in Amarillo, Texas at the Azteca Music Hall. Doors open 6:30, showtime 7:30. We'll be sending out some lineups next week.
Where's the website for that information? You know?
Aerolucha.com.
There you go, folks. You heard it from the man. Check it out. And another company that's going out there on the road and to try to entertain you, and they're bringing their show on the road. And I can tell you, they got some talented son of a guns. You'll see some great action, no doubt about that. So check it out. Keep it up on your on the calendar, on their website. Follow Conan on Twitter, and you'll get all that information eventually because he's going to be talking about it. He should talk
exactly
about it, right? Hey, man, thanks for joining me with Football Deals On. I will done deal. And I hope you have a wonderful holiday, Carlos. And I really I value your friendship. I respect you. Your knowledge is non-paralleled. And I would just say that Aero Lucha has got a very good man in the creative side. Good luck to you.
All right. Well, I can't leave this podcast without putting you over because this is from the heart. Much respect to you. Your knowledge is unparalleled and invaluable. I love everything you've done and that you keep doing, JR. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast. Boom.
The Ross Report. The Ross Report.
Really enjoyed talking to Conan, my buddy Carlos here tonight. Smart guy, man. Keep an eye on what he's doing. He's always around things that are, I think are good. I mean, he's when he's in control of the situation and the creative, he's pretty damn good at it. I'll tell you that. So, and maybe someday I will go to a game in Miami with him, but I'd rather him come to Oklahoma. I'll treat him like a king. Carlos should be the king of Oklahoma that day. And also thanks to Wade Keller, taking time out of his busy schedule for running the Daily Planet, also known as the Pro Wrestling Torch. He's the guy that made old Bruce Mitchell rich. Wade Keller. Yes, sir. So Pro Wrestling Torch at the Wade Keller is where you can find him on Twitter. At PW Torch on Twitter as well. Good stuff there. Been reading it for years, about 30 years, actually. I want to thank all you folks again that joined us in Boston. We were at the Laugh Boston, a wonderful club, great hospitality, good, good people. Thank you. And the folks turned out. It's colder than hell. I really admire you. I don't think I'd have come to see JR on that cold day. It was cold. But God bless you. Thanks for coming. Thanks to Jeremy Borash, who kicked ass as our MC and my tag team partner. We had a lot of fun, as always. And we sold a lot of books during our show. And so I signed a bunch of them. Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling is now available through Amazon and Borders and, you know, Bookends in New Jersey. By the way, Bookends New Jersey has signed copies that they will ship to you anywhere you are hearing this. Bookends. And they're in New Jersey. Easy to find. Google it, will you? And get you a signed book from them. They're good people. And they'll take care of you. And I'm told that Amazon UK finally has Slobberknocker back in stock. I'm not sure of that, but I'm told that. I hope that's right. But check it out. Online, you can check it out. Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling, now at the UK, Amazon UK. It's also in Amazon Australia. Just started that, I heard. So check it out, folks. We appreciate the support. We think it's a great Christmas holiday gift, good stocking stuff or whatever. Good read that we're proud of, and I'm glad I finished it. And I'm so happy that so many people like it. It's a story of perseverance. It's not a wrestling story. There's wrestling in it, no doubt. But it's about an old fat kid from Oklahoma that people said was not going to make it with a southern accent. And then, of course, then three bouts of Bell's palsy, you're not going to make it. And I'm still around because I refuse to quit. And that's kind of what this book is about, refusing to quit and not allowing anybody else to tell you what you can be or what you can't be. Remember what my granny said, Jimmy, somebody's going to do it. Why not you? Damn right, granny. They let me dream big and it worked out. What a life. Don't forget to support Podcast One and download the brand new Podcast One app. You know, that's available at the App Store and on Google Play. It's a really a one-of-a-kind app, very innovative, very, really slick. Let you experience podcasts in a way never before. That's at the App Store and Google Play, the Podcast One app. And don't forget, you can find all the links to my sponsors at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button in the right top right corner of the page. And then drop the bionic elbow on that Ross Report banner, baby. Because if you don't, it's going to be hard times. Hard times. Next week, my guest, with your guest, Josh Barnett, youngest UFC heavyweight champion ever, and my partner on Access TV, where we will be bringing you the much-anticipated Wrestle Kingdom 12 show, beginning on Saturday night, January the 6th, in prime time, 3 hours. You want to see good old Tanahashi and Jay White in the Intercontinental title match, Jericho and Omega, Alpha and Omega, no DQ now, no disqualification, and then the main event, or the last match on the card, depending on your perspective, is for the IWGP heavyweight title, Kazuchika Okada versus Tetsuya Naito, big time. We're going to voice those matches over on January the 4th. For the time difference, it's going to be a few hours after it finishes in Tokyo. It's going to be fresh. It's going to be good. So Josh and I will talk about that next week and what he's doing. And I want to ask him about Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey getting into WWE at some point in time. Why people should be keeping an eye on Shayna Baszler. I have my reasons. He'll have his because he's trained her. So a lot of good stuff next week with Josh. And then the Hall of Famer Kevin Nash will join us. He just had a massive knee surgery, like a knee replacement of his right knee, which is absolutely destroyed. So he's got that. He's healing from that. Talk to Kevin about that. Today's wrestling, all kinds of good things. So, and money. You know, he's made a lot of money, and there's a reason for that. He'll tell us about that next week and what you might want to do to help your stash of money. Kevin Nash, Josh Barnett, two tough guys. My guest could be your guest right here next week on the Ross Report. So, folks, remember, it's the holiday season. You cannot do too many nice things for people. You can't. Try. And tell me, I told you so later. You can't. Be nice to everybody you see as often as you can. And remember that our tomorrows are never guaranteed. From the rolling hills of my home state of Oklahoma, where I will be attending the Rose Bowl game on January 1st in Pasadena, California, where I hope that the Heisman Trophy winner, Baker Mayfield, and the phenomenon young coach, Lincoln Riley, lead my Sooners to a victory and one more chance to win that 8th national title. It means a lot. Rose Bowl, here I come. And right now, I'm getting in my truck. I'm going back to Norman. And with that, I'll say, so long, everybody!
Thanks for listening to The Ross Report. Download a brand new episode every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.